Ladies and gentlemen, Germany and Czechoslovakia are still at sword's points. Germany stands pat on her ultimatum. Czechoslovakia refuses to yield. The British Parliament meets tomorrow in special session to consider the situation. But so grave does Prime Minister Chamberlain of England deem the situation today that he is not waiting for the special session of Parliament. He is speaking now, and for his speech, we take you now to London, England.
An earlier statement would not have been possible when I was flying backwards and forwards across Europe and the position was changing from hour to hour. But today, there is a lull for a brief time, and I want to say a few words to you men and women of Britain and the Empire, and perhaps to others as well. And first of all, I must say something to those who have written to my wife or myself in these last weeks to tell us of their gratitude for my efforts and to assure us of their prayers for my success. Most of these letters have come from women, mothers or sisters of our own countrymen. But there are countless others besides, from France, from Belgium, from Italy, even from Germany. And it has been heartbreaking to read of the growing anxiety they reveal and their intense relief when they thought too soon that the danger of war was past. If I felt my responsibility heavy before, to read such letters has made it seem almost overwhelming. How horrible, fantastic, incredible it is that we should be digging trenches and trying on gas masks here because of a quarrel in a faraway country between people of whom we know nothing. It seems still more impossible that a quarrel which is already settled in principle should be the subject of war. I can well understand the reasons why the Czech government have felt unable to accept the terms which have been put before them in the German memorandum. Yet I believe, after my talks with Herr Hitler, that if only time were allowed, it ought to be possible for the arrangements for transferring the territory that the Czech government has agreed to give to Germany to be settled by agreement under conditions which would ensure fair treatment for the population concerned. You know already that I have done all that one man can do to compose this quarrel. After my visits to Germany, I realized vividly how Herr Hitler feels that he must champion other Germans, and his indignation that grievances have not been met before this. He told me privately, and last night he repeated publicly, that after this Sudeten-German question is settled, that is the end of Germany's territorial claims in Europe. After my first visit to Berchtesgaden, I did get the assent of the Czech government to proposals which gave the substance of what Herr Hitler wanted, and I was taken completely by surprise when I got back to Germany and found that he insisted that the territory should be handed over to him immediately and immediately occupied by German troops without previous arrangements for safeguarding the people within the territory who were not Germans or who did not want to join the German Reich. I must say that I find this attitude unreasonable. If it arises out of any doubts that Herr Hitler feels about the intentions of the Czech government to carry out their promises and hand over the territory, I've offered on the part of the British government to guarantee their words, and I'm sure the value of our promise will not be underrated anywhere. I shall not give up the hope of a peaceful solution or abandon my efforts for peace as long as any chance for peace remains. I would not hesitate to pay even a third visit to Germany if I thought it would do any good. But at this moment, I see nothing further that I can usefully do in the way of mediation. Meanwhile, there are certain things that we can and should do at home. Volunteers are still wanted for air raid precautions, for fire brigade and police services, and for the territorial units. I know that all of you men and women alike are ready to play your part in the defense of the country, and I ask you to offer your services, if you have not already done so, to the local authorities, who will tell you if you are wanted and in what capacity. Don't be alarmed if you hear of men being called up to man anti-aircraft defenses or ships. These are only precautionary measures, such as a government must take in times like this, but they do not necessarily mean that we have determined on war or that war is imminent. However much we may sympathize with a small nation confronted by a big and powerful neighbor, we cannot, in all circumstances, undertake to involve the whole British Empire in war simply on her account. If we have to fight, it must be on larger issues than that. I am myself a man of peace to the depths of my soul. Armed conflict between nations is a nightmare to me. But if I were convinced that any nation had made up its mind to dominate the world by fear of its force, I should feel that it must be resisted. Under such a domination, life for people who believe in liberty would not be worth living. But war is a fearful thing, and we must be very clear before we embark on it that it is really the great issues that are at stake, and that the call to risk everything in their defense, when all the consequences are weighed, is irresistible. For the present, I ask you to wait as calmly as you can for the events of the next few days. As long as war has not begun, there is always hope that it may be prevented. And you know that I am going to work for peace till the last moment. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain of England speak from number 10 Downing Street in London. His address to the British Empire was brought to you over the combined networks of the National Broadcasting Company. We suggest that you stay tuned to this station for broadcasts which will keep you in close touch with the latest developments in Europe. Prime Minister Chamberlain's voice was heard in America via RCA Communications.